So I know nobody in the room is anticipating this session at all, because it's such a boring company with nothing going on these days. But we're obviously thrilled to have Rogers Communications here as part of our program today. And as I've been saying to everybody, great to see you guys in person. I know we had a little Blue Jays event not too long ago, so I've actually seen you two more recently. I've seen a lot of other executives on stage, but nice to have an in-person conference attendance. For people who don't know, Tony Staffieri, CEO, Glenn Brandt, CFO, with us here. And guys, just so you know, I'm trying to be rude, I'm warning everybody, nobody's handing out mics for questions from the audience. They're sending me emails, so if you see me on my phone, it's not me multitasking or asking Darren.
We're always happy to see the phones get used, Vince.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm going to throw out an opening question. Be honest, I'm not going to probe on this topic too much, so you guys can say as much or as little as you want, but anything you're willing and able to provide in terms of an update on the remedy negotiations and the deal process?
Sure, let's start with that. First off, good morning, everyone. I'll get into it, and good to see you all in person, and thanks for having us, Vince. In terms of the approval process for the Shaw transaction, as you saw, the Competition Bureau decided to move the file to the tribunal. As part of that process, there's also an injunction hearing. So there are two parts that the Competition Bureau filed for, as you know. And under Section 104, the first one is an injunction. The hearing for that is set for June 29th and 30th. And that's really to prevent us from closing the transaction without Bureau and or tribunal approval, which is a bit academic because we would still need ISED approval in any event. And so we're going through that process. We have a case manager assigned to, which is one of the tribunal panel judges assigned to the file, and we're working through actively with the Bureau and that case manager in terms of the timeline for submissions as well as the hearing dates. So we're working through that. I think when you step back, there's a couple of things to reiterate and keep in mind. And one is we heard the government in terms of the desire to have a fourth wireless player in the market. And we're committed to work on that objective. And so we're selling all the assets of Freedom Wireless. Second key point is Rogers and Shaw continues to be committed to each other to get this transaction done. And so we'll work through the process to get there. And then the final important point is we have a good roster, if I can call it that, of qualified bidders that we think are ultimately going to hit the mark in terms of what's required from a remedy standpoint. So I think it's important as you look to us move through the process that those fundamental principles are there. The other point I'd leave you with is our core business continues to have the momentum that you saw us deliver in the first quarter, where we upped our guidance for the full year, and nothing's changing on that front. We continue to execute towards those expectations. The last piece, probably best for Glenn to touch on, is how we continue to see the synergy benefits ultimately on the Shaw transaction. And as we continue with some of that work, Glenn will probably share some insights with you.
Sure. Thanks, Tony. Good morning, everyone. The delays notwithstanding, we continue to lean in on the integration and synergy file with Shaw. And those efforts are well underway across several fronts. We are within Rogers making room across our organization for bringing in Shaw leaders and employees to join the combined company team. This only works when the two companies are able to come together, and so that work continues. Through that exercise, we're identifying the redundancies and duplications that you would anticipate. But more than that, also identifying the processes and enterprise systems that where we can rest some of the synergies away through elimination of duplicated enterprise resource management systems, as well as just improving the whether it's across procurement, the buying across the combined entities. There's a number of different buckets and categories we're looking at. Through our procurement group, we're starting to identify the key suppliers that we're going to need for the combined entity. When we come together with Shaw, we essentially double our wireline business. Through that, we're already effectively managing the supply side, global strains on supply chain, effectively on Rogers standalone. That will become, we'll get even more traction with our vendors with the volumes that we'll be buying on the combined basis. And so we anticipate savings coming from there. The $1 billion target that we've identified, we're on plan, on schedule to deliver that. That $1 billion over the 2 years following close has been identified specifically across the wireline business. And so we had anticipated the remedy in coming up with that targeted number. It'll come from headcount initiatives. It'll come from vendor savings. It'll come from process improvements and just straight elimination of inefficiencies and duplication. It also comes across the network where we've got, within wireless, we have a significant number of our cell sites currently operating with microwave uplink. And with the Shaw transaction closing, we bring in-house fiber capacity out west that we can eliminate the higher cost microwave feeds with in-house fiber and basically eliminate that expense. So it's the savings will come across Rogers within the wireless side of things as well. But there are a number of different buckets where we can we'll drive those savings. Perhaps I'll pause there.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. I'll follow up with you in a second on that key topic. But two process things to try to clarify from your opening comments, Tony. One, for this late June hearing, was there not a time frame where you were supposed to put a submission into the tribunal and should not be coming up soon?
Yeah, the submission for that hearing is end of May, May 31st. In terms of both parties, the Bureau as well as Rogers slash Shaw putting in the submission, so that'll be at the end of May. As I said, things are still fluid in terms of timelines on some of these things, but that is the initial submission. And so what you'll see as a result of that filing is our position clearly articulated.
Okay. And the other process one was just to confirm or clarify if you can, even though affidavits are being performed and those filings are being prepared for those time frames, that doesn't preclude negotiations with the Bureau on a negotiated settlement with a counterparty they deem sufficient at the same time, or does one have to stop while the other goes on?
No, that's the negotiations can still continue, and you saw a statement come out last Friday from the Bureau that notwithstanding the move of the file to the tribunal, there's still the opportunity to negotiate. And so think about the steps as independent. We'll have the injunction hearing. There is a mediation step in the process before it goes to tribunal. And then there's the tribunal. And throughout that process, starting from now, there's still the opportunity to continue to work with the Bureau. And we're encouraged by their desire to continue to work with us on figuring out the right remedy to complete the transaction.
Great. I'm going to leave it there on that topic. I will check my phone in a few minutes to see if anybody from the audience or the webcast has additional questions. But to come back on the synergies, if you want, but to hone in on the cable EBITDA growth of 13% in the first quarter and good margin expansion there. It was obviously a much better number than anybody on the street expected. I think you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that some of that was headcount reduction that you've done on the Rogers Cable side, almost preparing the decks for Shaw Cable to come in and be merged, where you're going to have some redundant functions. Is that the case? And if so, does any of that have to be put on pause while you make sure the time frame here isn't stretched out by another 6 months or more?
Yeah, let me set it up, and Glenn will go through some of the specifics in terms of the cost reductions. But, you know, as we've said, when we look at our cable business, and I know you didn't ask this, Vince, but maybe we'll come back to it, but we wanted better execution on the sales side, and we're making progress there, which is good to see. And we've said we think we can do better. We've got the right product set and a number of other things that we're investing in to get us there. To deliver. But the second piece of it was to improve EBITDA performance. And so there are two things at play. One is I would describe as a reallocation of our cost structure. So we wanted to put more money back into the front line in terms of technical operations, call center operations, to get customer service right and start to bring churn down. And you saw that early indications of that in the first quarter. And we continue to move that down nicely, as well as reallocate some of the costs to advertising, marketing, again, in aid of the sales efforts. Door-to-door sales would be another channel that we've sparked up and is performing nicely. Against that backdrop, we've embarked on costs throughout the company and looking at that not only in our cable business, but in wireless media, and corporate functions as well. Not only in anticipation of Shaw, but we think there are opportunities there that are going to unlock EBITDA growth, and you saw that in the full year guidance that we put out in terms of increasing that. And so those are sort of the broad pieces of it. And so Glenn, maybe talk a little bit about some of the specific areas that...
Maybe just to help set the expectations around Q2, we had had guided the 13% for Q1. There's a component of that that reflected some of the non-recurring elements that you've touched on in your question, Vince, and that's why we guided in Q2 to 5% EBITDA growth for the second quarter. And so think of that as being directionally where we're going to level out through the second quarter for the sustainable part of those cost savings. We've leaned in on the integration and synergy exercise. As Tony has said, some of this was going to come with or without Shaw and was underway in preparation for Shaw, but some of it will be clearing headroom for Shaw leaders to join. I'll have folks joining my leadership team within finance. That's true across the business units. We'll have a Western presence within Rogers that we haven't enjoyed to that extent before. We've had it in the wireless side. We'll now be back out west on the wireline side. I saw that about 20 years ago in my career. It's good to see it come back again when we close. So. Some of that will be filled in with the leaders coming in from Shaw. The savings part of the exercise will cut across content, and we saw some of that in the announcement. It'll cut across volume reduction from the numbers of cable subscribers we'll have in the system. It will come from the elimination of the redundancies that I'd mentioned earlier. That's on the headcount side. Within our core functions, real estate, I think all of us in the room here have learned within our companies that we have a real estate footprint that going forward we're just not going to need to the same extent. And so we've started identifying some of those costs, maybe a little further out, but through the short to medium term, where we can lighten up our real estate footprint and drive some of those $1 billion in synergies. You save capital from either reducing the leasehold or the leased premises that we have that get capitalized now within our leverage, or you free up capital with owned real estate. Rogers has a large real estate footprint, as does Shaw. That also lightens up some of the operating expenses and just running those real estate offices and buildings. And so some of those efforts are already underway to help drive synergies. There's several categories that that I could run through the list. They each have individual work teams here as well as within Shaw to identify and get at, you know, driving those savings. But in terms of setting expectations for Q2, think of that 5% as being the core recurring savings that we will have wrested out of the business through the second quarter.
Sorry, just a question from that did get sent to me. I almost had to chuckle. I'm not going to ask it. I'll tell you after if you want to know what it was. Hate to go into a bit of minutiae, just to clarify one point you're making there, Glenn. The one-time benefit on the programming renewal side in the first quarter, I think I was one of the first quarter calls, said math between 13 and 5 is pretty clear. It was about $40 million. Mm-hmm. You weren't willing to pin it down to that extent. But then the confusion got a bit bigger a week later, or 2 weeks later, when BC said they made a $70 million gain, seemingly on the same contract renewal or part of the same contract renewal. The 70 has no bearing on what your one-time number was, just to be clear.
No,
right?
keep in mind those, and I'm not going to comment on BC's, how they've calculated their gain or that. Each of the companies will have different programming costs across different contracts, different accrual levels. There's no particular reason why those would be similar. We have been working across our entire cost base within content as well as other categories, looking to identify and drive those savings, Vince. And so I'll give you the same answer I gave you on the Q1 call, that I won't confirm or clarify the amount further, other than to point you to the 5% level as being the sustainable portion of that 13% coming through the second quarter.
Good stuff. And before I get into your segments and wireless and current operations, the last kind of thing related to the deal is sort of the management team and depth. And this is bigger than just the Shaw deal, because obviously it's been an issue for the past year of a few changes in senior roles at your company. And my perception was that some of the Shaw, I don't think you even said this on one or two of your calls, some of the Shaw senior people may be interjected into the combined entity for cultural reasons and for management depth. Are those kind of decisions a problem now, Tony, that you have to put those on hold and you're kind of left with interim people in a few places where you'd thought by now you may be filling those roles permanently?
The short answer is it's not an issue. As we made changes, we indexed to, as we've said, focused on operational execution and experience in that. And as we made our management changes, you would have heard a stat we quoted previously. We've added over 30 years of experience in terms of direct telecom operating, or more importantly, hands-on Rogers experience. And so, and we'll let the results sort of speak for themselves as they continue to unfold. And I think we're off to a good start, and the increased guidance really speaks to the confidence in this team to execute. As we come together with Shaw and plan for Shaw, we'll continue to evolve and adapt the way we think about our management team and our management structure. There are a few things we want to make sure we cover in that. As you would expect, going from an Ontario and Eastern provinces centric cable business to now national, we want to make sure we get the right representation nationally. And so I think it's a good opportunity to meld together with the Shaw management team at the right level and have representation across. And so you can expect, and we have said outwardly that you can expect somewhere between a quarter to a third of our workforce over time being based out west, and so our management structure will evolve to capture that.
Okay. Moving into wireless, but sticking with a similar theme here, is I think you and I have discussed this in the past when you were in your former role as CFO, that there seemed to be, in my perspective, a structural problem at Rogers where the culture just wanted to chase sub-ads at the end of every quarter in wireless, and there was this chronic focus on volume versus price that kind of bled through over time as weaker ARPU and churn metrics than the other two national carriers. Is that something that requires an operational executive to fix, or is that something that has to come from your seat at the top to say, look, that's not really how we want to run the business. We want to be balanced between profitability and volume growth so that the people you pick underneath you are almost less important than what your direction is on that front. And do you agree with that as a guiding principle?
If you're to look at our results, they are what they are in terms of there was an, you know, an indexation to lower value subscribers, and in particular on tablets. And so part of the changes we've made is to focus on a couple of things. One is the value metrics have to be driven by revenue and profitability first and foremost. And then the secondary metrics we look to are the subscriber growth, and we've indexed to mobile phones, and we've changed our external reporting. And as you've seen over the last few quarters, we've been executing well in terms of market share and leading market share on mobile phone net adds. And so that's a core principle. And then the second piece of it is ARPU as well. So we've sort of redesigned, and we talk a lot about a performance-based culture, and how we think about and incent our teams is based on those four principles first and foremost. So overriding revenue, profitability, and then subscriber growth with meaningful ARPA growth as well. And so a lot of good work's been done on that front. You know, as you look to ARPU growth in the first quarter, for example, what you saw was very good growth of 3% on ARPU, but that was largely attributable to roaming. And it's good to see that come back. And we're probably running at about 70 to 75% of pre-pandemic levels of roaming in terms of volume. Consumers trending well. The business market is still to come in our view, and still soft relative to pre-pandemic levels. But what you will start to see moving forward is also underlying ARPU beyond roaming start to progress nicely. We, in addition to focusing on mobile phones, we're trying to get the right value proposition between our Fido brand and the Rogers main brand. And we're seeing our subscriber net acquisitions moving nicely back to the Rogers main brand, which is the higher value ARPU. And you'll start to see that come through in following quarters.
Having tried to push you down the volume versus pricing path, let me come back and just ask straight up about volume. Sub ads have been pretty strong for the whole industry for a few quarters now. Any updates on what's driving that, and are those kind of strong trends continuing in Q2?
Well, I think you know, as we think about volume versus value, it's always you know, I would say we want value, and we need to get our fair share, in most quarters, leading share. And that's what you're seeing play out. Let's not forget, we've got a terrific backdrop in terms of the size of the market growing. You saw in Q1 it grow at about 5%. As we play out Q2 and we're almost two-thirds of the way through it, we continue to see the market growing at about that level, 4.5% to 5%. And so we're very focused on making sure that we're getting decent share. And we expect to lead in share in the second quarter again, as that comes in nicely, and we focus on a few things. Churn reduction, and good work going on in terms of base management, investments, as I've talked about, that we've made in customer experience. Our Pro on the Go is capitalizing well on consumers that want things delivered to their home, and so that's working well. And then the other piece of it is on the gross ad side. And as things open up and traffic and volume in our stores is increasing exponentially, we're seeing very good gross ad market share. And that really speaks to the strength of our distribution channel. We've always had that, and you see that coming back now. And so it's the combination of those two factors that is contributing to a very strong net ad position for us in the marketplace.
You mentioned the churn, obviously one of the factors in the net ad strength. You didn't mention it, but I'll toot your horn for you, but your postpaid churn has declined in 8 of the past 9 quarters and down an impressive 12 basis points year over year in the first quarter. How much of that do you think is the somewhat tame competitive environment right now versus, you know, deliberate efforts on customer service and base management that Rogers is trying to execute on?
All of the above, Vince. Certainly, You know, one of the big churn drivers is some of the competitive intensity that you see on handset pricing. And given some of the supply chain issues that has constrained the flow of handsets, you're seeing much less funding from the OEMs and therefore much fewer incentives in the marketplace. And so that drives the consumer to, you know, as they look at upgrading or replacing their handset, keeping the one they have. And that's a trend that we saw back when we moved from subsidy to device financing almost 3 years ago now. And so what you saw is the and you continue to see is the average life of phones continuing to extend. And so therefore, that's certainly one of the factors, but I wouldn't say it's the main factor. What we're really seeing in the marketplace for us are some of the base management and outreach programs that we now have, much improved customer experience. And so we're really just going through week on week, month on month, what are the churn drivers, and let's get at those and fix those. And they always come back to coverage in particular areas, which has improved significantly for us and the industry overall. The second piece of it is bill surprises that continue to come down, especially as consumers continue to move to the unlimited plans. And on in terms of each of those tactical items. And so we continue to see the opportunity for churn reduction, not only into the second quarter, but for the rest of the year.
And you mentioned the bill shock and the unlimited plans. Can you just give us a quick update on data overage fees and revenue? Is that now fully out of your system, except for maybe there's some baseline of 1% of revenue or something that never goes away, but other than that, is it the discretionary part gone?
Yeah, you may recall we moved aggressively to promote the unlimited plans, and we set it over 3 million of our customers on the unlimited plans. And so you saw the quick erosion of overage revenues come out of our revenue base. For the first quarter, overage revenues would have been about 1%, and it continues to be about flat to declining. We'll see some small ups and downs as some of the customers on cap plans move out of the home and start using again. And we're seeing usage, for example, on wireless up 40 to 50% again year on year. And so that's really good to see. And that'll be a catalyst to move to the unlimited plans. But so we might see some pickup in it, but it's not going to be material and probably still sit around 1%.
Yeah. I think where we will see some of the upside to that, though, as Tony has said, is as we start getting out more and getting away from our home Wi-Fi areas and the data goes up, people will pick up larger buckets. Roaming is still largely untapped for the business market and really is just starting its recovery. And so as we just start resuming normal operations, normal day-to-day, it won't be like it was in 2019 exactly, but it'll be closer than we are today. That's going to bring more lift through our plans as well as just through the roaming revenue impact on ARPU.
Two-pronged question on that on roaming. Is the mix of roaming between consumer and business what it was in 2019?
No.
What I'm saying, what was it then versus what it is now or what can it never get back to? I assume you'll never get back to 50-50 or wherever you were.
Won't get back maybe that far. At least it'll take a good long while before, you know, the business market recovers to those levels. We're back right now at somewhere in the range of 90% of where we were on overall roaming revenue in 2019. About, as Tony has said, about 70 or 75% of that is volume, predominantly consumer and the pent-up consumer travel. I dare say several of us in the room here got away for March break. The business market has not yet recovered really there. That's why it is so wonderful to see everybody here in person. On the rate side, the rate increases would fill in the other 30%. That, of course, will travel over to the business market as well as that volume comes back. But we will get to parity and beyond 2019 as consumers still, continues to recover as the business market comes back. But the mix will be, I think, more predominantly consumer than it was previously, Vince.
I think you've basically answered my part two question, but just to put a nail on it, to get back to over 100% of 2019
ultimately,
roaming revenue, you do not need business travel to be back at 2019 levels. Is that
correct?
Right.
Correct. The mix of rate as well as the larger index on the consumer volume.
Good.
Sorry about that, folks.
No problem.
That was my timing cue.
Let's talk about customer service on that topic. No, so last little thing on ARPU is we hear some of your national peers talk a bit more about these premium plans where some content or higher speed access is being thrown in return for a higher price point. I don't believe Rogers has really gone to that differentiated pricing yet, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that something you may be considering as one way to help drive some premium ARPU growth?
Over time, we'll look at that, Vince, and are looking at that. So as you would expect, much like you've seen in the U.S. market, you know, right now it's still about moving to the unlimited plans and the value proposition of that in and of itself. As we see usage go up, is really going to be the primary driver. Rogers and others, I would say, have feathered in other value proposition, whether it's content, in our case, Disney Plus, and a few other things. And there are other ones in the marketplace as well. And I would say they sort of do their job in enhancing the value proposition. As we move further, will we move to things like quality of video connection, for example, or speed tiers, et cetera. We think the market will evolve that way eventually in terms of differentiation, but we're probably premature in trying to introduce that into the market now is our read.
I think 5G will be a contributor and a driver to that, and we've been a leader in 5G in terms of investing in spectrum and you know, the capabilities of our network. You're going to see that grow over time. And that's really, you know, what was behind the launch of the unlimited plans to, you know, folks can use their data buckets and their speed tiering for settling in where they, you know, where their usage is going to need. 5G's got a long way to go yet to help fill in that market.
And I was just going to ask about 5G, Glenn, so thanks. You're obviously referencing consumer 5G. On the enterprise and business 5G front, any meaningful updates to share on how things are going with partnerships with cloud companies or your private networks that you're setting up for mining companies or others? And if I can throw a bit of flavor on top of that, we've heard both BC and TELUS earlier today talk about 5G mobility revenues for enterprise at least making up the difference for what they're losing on the fixed line side from legacy enterprise services. Does that put a company like Rogers in a unique position that you can do a lot of the same mobility 5G applications for enterprise, but you don't have much incumbent share in on the fixed line side, so you can maybe think of it as more of a disruptor as opposed to just protecting what you already had?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we feel like we sit in a very good position in the enterprise space. Particularly as we come together with Shaw. But if I focus more specifically on the first part of your question, you know, how are we seeing the 5G revenues come in? We've always said it would evolve first on the enterprise side, and that's what we continue to see. The private area network solution market is growing nicely. The second one is IoT as kind of the next one. And I would say the industry overall, you're seeing good growth in that. And we're certainly focused on that. Some of the other ones in terms of edge compute, et cetera, I would say are still nascent. While there are proposals out there and accounts we're winning, it's still small. And so we'll continue to see it as an evolution of revenue, but there really isn't you know, a specific solution we can point to sort of say, you know, there is X dollars in terms of the market. I would say the market is still expanding. Second part of the question is, you know, our ability to capitalize in either a wireless substitute or an enterprise substitute for landline. And, you know, one of the big catalysts for us is our exclusive partnership we just announced with Microsoft. where it integrates the Teams platform with voice and mobile phone all into, you know, one device to be able to capitalize on that. And it's a terrific solution that can scale for large enterprise as well. And so, and I mention that as an example of our ability to more and more go in and substitute that legacy business with solutions that are going to be purely incremental for us.
Mm-hmm. Good. I do have one from the audience, so I'm going to ask it, and you feel free to say it goes too far. You don't want to go there because I didn't warn you about it. But somebody wants to know, if can you clarify if the Competition Bureau has said that a network sharing deal is not a precondition to getting approval? Can the deal, would they be acceptable to some sort of remedy that does not include network sharing, or is network sharing a table stakes?
I would answer the question this way. Now that they've filed their documents for all to see, they've articulated and enumerated the items that they had concerns with. And if you go through those, you can see the roadmap of what they're looking for. And I think it's fair to conclude, as you look at that, there is no requirement for network sharing solution as part of that. And so maybe that's the most helpful way to answer the question.
Good. I have another one from the audience, which I'm sure you'd be happy to discuss, is with the benefits of hindsight, how do you think the Rogers Unlimited program and moving first and doing that accelerated migration of customers onto unlimited plans, the benefit of hindsight, is how has that worked or not worked?
Yeah, I think implicit in the question is sort of a question as to whether or not the trade-off of moving fast and losing some of the overage revenues was worth it.
That's what I would have said if it was my question, but I was just reading it.
Yeah, and I think that's the implicit in there. Without trying to revisit or rewrite history, I think I would focus on the fact that we've got what we got, which is the largest base on Unlimited. That's one of the biggest churn improvement drivers as well. And so, you know, we talk about bill shock, getting out of capped plans, and that momentum. In the end, we are where we are, and it's put us in a very good position from a profile when you look at our customer base. And so, pleased with where we're at and the position we're in to be able to leverage off of going forward for those metrics that we talk about, ARPU growth as well as churn reduction.
I guess implied in the question to you, Tony, is do you think in hindsight you struck the right balance of how fast you moved and what the initial price point was, or if you had to do it all over again, would there have been slight nuances, even though the end game you're at now, 2.5 years later, looks attractive?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't matter. We could debate it in terms of how we might have done certain things differently, could have done differently, but I look at it as where are we at today and what does it mean for us going forward? And as I said, I'm not sure it matters how we got here. We are where we are.
I could ask you what Rogers Wireless would look like if you never bought Microsoft, but again, you'd say, well,
right. Let's
getting academic. Another question from here, which was kind of on my list as well, but I'll ask it this way. You recently did a bit of a fiber overbuild in Atlantic Canada, or announced one. Can you talk a bit about your whole fiber versus DOCSIS outlook and both competing with these new fiber-based telcos as well as, you know, how you think about it for your own network enhancement?
Yeah. We think about network two ways. One is with the population growth we're seeing in Canada, one of our growth strategies is to make sure we keep pace on the build. And population growing 3 to 5%, we continue to focus on our build of 3 to 5%. In terms of homes passed, we get our fair share, and that to deliver the 3 to 5% top line growth, add on top of that ARPA improvements, and that's our business model in terms of revenue growth, and that's what we're focused on. The second piece of it relates to what I would describe as continued enhancement to the network we have. And I think it's important as we think about our network vis-a-vis the competition, we've got a few things going for us. One is for the last 10 to 12 years, we've been deploying fiber. And so We sit with complete end-to-end fiber all the way to the home or to the prem in portions of our network, and you saw us increase tier speeds on that to 2.5 symmetrical up and down. In other parts of our network where we still have coax, I would say for the last mile, because we've all, as other cable cos have done, and we've been quite aggressive in it of late, is pushing fiber further along in the nodes, into the nodes. And that's where DOCSIS comes in. And it's been a very effective, cost-effective solution for us to lead the market in terms of internet performance. And so across our entire footprint, we offer speeds of at least 1 gig or higher. The market today, just to put it in perspective, number of customers on 1 gig or higher would be in the circa 10% range. So we have a network that continues to be well above where market demand is. And as we move to DOCSIS 4.0, and the trials on that have already been announced, and you saw 8 gigs of download speed, 6 of upload speeds. And so we think we're sitting quite nicely in terms of the ability to lead in the marketplace ubiquitously with internet performance, both in terms of speed, low latency, reliability. And so for us, the question of are we going DOCSIS 4 or something else, we'll do whatever makes sense in the particular area. In the case of out east, we decided to go to more depth of fiber, in large part because it's aerial. And so it was very cost effective for us to do that in that geography, and gave us a much better competitive advantage vis-a-vis the others. And so, you know, worth repeating that in addition to that internet superiority, which is kind of our core value proposition, we layer on top of that the Comcast Xfinity product roadmap of video, smart home monitoring, that is doing quite nicely in the marketplace.
If I can summarize a bit what you said there, is it fair to say you have the optionality to choose in every different region whether the DOCSIS path or a full fiber overbuild is better, as opposed to your competitors who really have no choice? It's fiber or nothing. And you know, fiber may be better, but at least you get the choice and you can scale the investment and time it over several years, as opposed to being forced to do it right away.
That's absolutely right, Vince. And so that's why when you look at our capital intensity, we'll sort of feather in all those solutions and still stay within that low 20% sort of capital intensity for our cable business as we look forward.
We have a couple minutes left. So let me just throw in one token media question. As long as you keep owning media and sports, you're going to get a question from me about it. Just so you know, if you don't want questions, you have something you can do about it. Fans are back. Jays games, TV advertising seems to be recovering from the pandemic, but you're still guiding a negative EBITDA in the media segment for the second quarter. And what does it take to get back to positive? And
sure. And
can we ever get back to the $140 million level you were at in 2019?
So I'm not going to give specific numbers as to where we're going to guide to for the rest of this year, other than to say we will be positive. We've got a strong recovery underway. We're well down the path. And so we'll be slightly negative through the second quarter. But I think, you know, beyond that, we will have turned the corner and we'll be back to positive territory and strong positive territory events. The recovery really is on the back of the return of live action sports. The Jays have an exciting season underway, and we're seeing large crowds in attendance. We're also seeing large audiences following them on Sportsnet, and new advertising categories that are helping build on the recovery underway with the return of live attendance sports. But there's a host of growth and improvement that. We've seen strong year-over-year recovery from where we were over the last couple of years going through COVID, and the impact they had on the media markets was profound. So the TV and Sportsnet audiences are coming back in large numbers. Still more to do on the radio side of things, because we are still seeing the recovery of the commuter market in particular. Many of us are still working from home. as that comes back, you'll see that build as well. But no, the recovery is well underway, Vince, for seeing a strong recovery of earnings through this year.
And any reason to think the 2019 level is something we'll never see again, or that
no,
medium term you can get back there?
They'll continue to build, and we'll see that come back in time. Okay. I'm not going to put a time frame on it, but we'll see that come back.
Medium term, I said.
Yeah.
That can be
absolutely
whatever we want it to be. I'm going to throw one last one in, which segues off that a little bit, is just non-core asset sales and potential monetization.
Yep.
Of, I won't list anything, I'll leave it up to you guys if there's anything you want to comment on. Is that something you're considering over the next several months to pay down some of the acquisition debt? How much and how quickly could we see anything on that
sure.
front?
Let me touch on it quickly, and then we can fill in later on. I think the primary driver in delevering is going to be driving synergies and revenue growth on the other side of coming together with Shaw. And so that will always be the largest impetus for delevering. However, we do have a number of tools open to us. First and foremost, the remedy sales proceeds on the Shaw's wireless business. Over and above that, we have large real estate holdings, which I touched on earlier. We do still have a sizable holding on our balance sheet in terms of Cogeco shares, which doesn't drive EBITDA, and in the event the right proposal came along, we'd consider it, but we're not under any obligation or need to move quickly on that one. I think we're looking to execute first on the remedy, and then follow through on synergies. One part of that drivers for synergies will be the real estate holdings. Is probably the first one we look to.
That's fair enough. Thank you for allowing us to go a minute over, and much appreciated. I know there's a lot going on with you guys. It's a busy time, so being willing to come and face the crowd in person, much appreciated. So Tony and Glenn, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for the opportunity. It's great to see everybody in person here, so thank you.
We're going to take a half an hour lunch break, and then, as I mentioned at the beginning of the day, the Quebec Or session is no longer going to be live here on stage, but you'll be able to sit in the room and watch me interview Hugh Simard on a webcast. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you, Vince. Thanks all.